I may or I may not. You know, it's choice is what we have in this world. And if we exercise choice, that means every minute of the day, we have the ability to create the future the way that we want, not fearing failure in social terms.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the You Versus You podcast, where I talk with members of the Council for Human Development about how we can expand our minds and recode reality. Today, I'm here with Kern Frost. Kern, today we wanted to talk about failure, right?
Yeah, just how exciting that can really be.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with it?
Basically, my whole life has been a failure. But I'm proud of it. That's the point. Most people, they actually feel that they need success. And success is like a whip. They can't whip each other. And as we were just saying about getting out of bed, a lot of people feel guilty if they don't get out of bed early enough and they feel they haven't achieved enough in a day. No, some people, this is between you and me, they get up at 5 a.m. and then they go to the gym or something like that or work out. And you think, what? And then they come home and then they might read a book or do something like that. And then they go have a coffee and their latte and all their whatever they have, their chicken nuggets from McDonald's in the morning, very healthy. And then they start working at something ridiculous like 7:30. Can you imagine that just to start with? I mean, how ridiculous is that? Is that a successful life? No, that's a sad life. Much better that you just go to bed and have a kip and then get up when you want, maybe about 9, 10:30, push it to 11. As I said to you, keep pushing that threshold and that's success. Go 360 and take the whole day in bed. Invite somebody into the bed that you really like. And that's success. That's life. That's where it all gets off. Everything else is a hamster wheel.
I'm not sure if I agree with that, because I know that if you have a certain rhythm, you train your mind to be in a certain state. And I think you definitely are more productive if you wake up every day at a certain time. And it's proven that exercise in the morning is also very healthy.
So, yeah, that's by people who want to prove it, by the way.
Okay, well, I do feel different if I run in the morning than if I don't. Personally, I do feel more
like you feel like you've achieved something, like you've gone for a run.
Definitely, yeah.
I feel like something I've achieved something because I don't go for a run. It's the very idea of doing exercise is counterintuitive. It's counterproductive. I went to the doctors yesterday because for whatever reason I went to the doctors. I wanted to make sure I was still alive, and they took some tests, and I was apparently still alive, even though I'm nearly 58. And they said to me, you have got the heart and the pulse of an athlete, a professional athlete. I said, oh, that sounds exciting. They said, well, you must work out a lot. And I said, no, no press-ups, no sit-ups, no any ups. I just do nothing but think fit, and it works.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, if you think, they tests on people, for example, obviously my partner's a ballet dancer, or was a ballet dancer, and she was with the National and the Royal Ballet. And if you know anything about ballet, they work out 6 days a week and they are super, super athletes. When you see them on the stage, they're all smiling and they're all dancing. I had the fortunate or unfortunate experience of going behind the stage scenes on that after when people were doing a gala performance, and they'd go out and do their like 3 minute slot. And you go, oh, that's not long, 3 minutes, for God's sakes. And then they'd come off the stage all smiley, and then they go backstage, and it would be like someone who was on 40 to 60 cigarettes a day, coughing their guts up. I've never heard such coughing in all my life. And then they would relax themselves, lying on the floor. And then they get up and go, and then go back and do it again and do the same circle. So it is highly intensive exercise where they have to be, you know, there's got technique to it. It's got a huge amount of physical strength to be able to jump that high in the air and also land as well without breaking your legs. So it really is quite a pronounced kind of extreme, I wouldn't say sport, but just a form of dancing. But what they did was when they used to say to people in the ballet, if you're going to get sick, you know, go home, lie in bed, and imagine that you're going through the dance steps. Imagine that you're dancing, and you'll come back to the dance 40% fitter than if you didn't. Okay, if you didn't actually imagine it while you're in bed being sick. And you go, okay, that sounds interesting. So years ago, I thought, okay, this idea of lying in bed, you know, I quite mm-hmm. like it. And actually doing exercise without doing exercise might be a good idea. And just thinking about it could be a good idea. If it's working for these guys, okay, they might be at the top end of success and really dancing and doing all this coughing of your guts up. But I didn't want all the coughing and the guts. I didn't want the dancing. I just wanted the fitness. So I was getting a bit porky at the time. You know, you hit 50, the old metabolism starts going the wrong direction. And basically, you can look at pizza and it sort of like materializes into your stomach. You don't have to go through here. It just goes straight in. And you just get fatter all the time. So at that time, I remember I got chicken wings over the midriff, you know, like a muffin top. Oh, no, the chicken wings were under the arms, actually. So it all came up. And I got man boobs. And then it gravitated up to my neck and my head became a beach ball. And it was like that kind of, it was kind of an attractive look. My girlfriend said, there's three in the bed, you, me, and your belly. And I was thinking, this isn't working out very well now. So you don't want to manage a toile with a belly. Anyhow, so I thought this idea that I heard when she was talking about the ballet, I thought, that sounds good. I don't have to do anything. So what I realized was that you had something called antagonistic muscle groups. And what an antagonistic muscle group is that this one's a bicep, that one's a tricep, and that one works against that one. So when you do that, that one works. When you do that, that one works. I thought, oh, that's very interesting. I've never heard of antagonistic muscle groups. I've had antagonistic mothers around me, but not muscle groups. So I actually thought, okay, if I imagine a weight and I imagine that in my hand, and then I could possibly, when I was eating a piece of cake, I could imagine the cake as actual a weight. All right? And then I would bring the cake up to my mouth, flexing this muscle, and then I'd take it away, flexing that muscle. So I felt I could combine two things that I really enjoyed, cake and not doing exercise. So in that way, every time you brought the cake to your mouth, you knew that you were burning off the calories. So you actually program in your unconscious mind that the calories would be burnt off, which would then program your metabolism to speed up and burn the calories off. And it worked. So I would do, you know, I'd lay on the sofa with a cake in one hand and a glass of wine in the other. Okay, I'd flex this one coming up and then put it down, flex that one coming up with the cake. And it started to burn. I lost 9 kilos in about 30 days by doing that sort of intensive exercise in front of the television. I did have to use my toe to actually press the remote control because I didn't have it in my hands, but never mind. So it was a technical experience.
But so what were you then imagining?
You don't want to know that. I can't say that on the screen. you can't be talking about what I'm imagining in front of wine, cake and the telly. You know, these are sorts of things. But as far as the weight is concerned, I designed it to do it in the toilet. So my girlfriend wouldn't know that I was working out, you see. So when I would go to, not actually in the toilet, I was in the loo, but I wasn't doing anything in the loo. I have to be that very precise. Because I taught someone this technique years ago, and she came back to me, she said, it's very difficult to do this technique because I'm trying to go to the toilet and lift a weight at the same time. And it really just is, one's cancelling out the other. And I was going, yes, you've got it wrong. You just go to the, don't go to the toilet, just go to the toilet. And then and it was designed so you would do, for example, let's do it together. We'll do it together. Okay, have you got your hands? Yeah, just like this. These are your hands, by the way. That's what they are. And then you do that. But don't just do that. Just imagine in your head that there is a weight in your hand, maybe about 20 kilos, okay? And just bring up the weight. But you have to imagine that the weight has got a resistance. Okay, now don't drop it, but just take it back, reverse, and allow the weight to go down again. And you should feel that your muscle starts to tense. If we take it to 50 kilos, try it at that.
Yeah,
you have to use your imagination. Okay, but now take it to 250 kilos.
Yeah, it's not realistic.
Neither is you're getting up in the morning, but you still do it. But okay, now there are a number of exercises that I created for myself, which were, and I called them kernesthetics of all things, just as a laugh. And what I did was I started doing this in the bathroom. So I would go and do a couple of exercises, which would be a curl, which we all know, and I would increase the weight in my mind. And I didn't want to get hot and sweaty, by the way. A maximum of 5 to 20 seconds, and 20 seconds is pushing it. Probably more like and that's a whole exercise routine, by the way. It's not just one exercise, that's almost set. And really, what you find is the stronger you become, the more intense that can be. the more intense it is, you go into what's called an afterburn effect. That the afterburn effect in muscle building comes in around about for the next 24 hours after you've done an intensive. Okay, you don't have to get your heart going, by the way. I absolutely don't get my heart going on anything. Absolute pointless. You do not, you know, you only get a certain number of heartbeats in your life. You don't want to use them up running down the road, Agnes. Pointless. Unless the police are after you. That's the point when you only, that's the only point I can think of worth running. Everything else is ridiculous. So what you find is, as you go through this, you start to find that you get, you know, if you do it to start with, and you maybe do it just going to, before you're going to go to bed at night, maybe 5-10 seconds, you actually create the afterburn effect, which means when you go to bed, when I was a little bit porky, I used to actually sweat like a pig. It's not very nice, porky pig. When I go to bed, just by doing a couple of exercises, I go, Jesus, this is hot. But if you do cardio, you have to get your heart rate up here for you to burn any calories whatsoever. If you do intensive weights, you don't do that, but you get 24 hours of afterburn. So in other words, when you're running, you burn at the top here when you're running, and when your heart drops here, you stop burning. But if you do intense like this, then you just get a 24-hour burn, and the metabolism starts to work with that. So what happens is the body gets programmed by your mental behavior and your physical behavior. So what I theorized was is that that there were two kinds of profiles for a human being. One was, I called, from our anthropological origins thousands of years ago, one would be cave and the other one would be hunter. So if you were out on the hunt, just replicate it in your mind for a second. You'd be sort of running a little bit each day. You might be picking up food as you went, eating different snacks. It wouldn't matter if it was a Twix bar or you know, a Snickers or whatever. I don't think they had those 30,000 years ago. But it might have dropped into a McDonald's and had a Big Mac. But you'd have to pick up the food as it went along. So that's why I thought, okay, that's a good diet. It doesn't matter what I eat, just as long as it's getting burnt off, because I want this hunter, because they'd be highly, their metabolism would be burning at a very fast rate, because that's what the daily profile would have been. Now, cave would have been where you got to be a sad bastard like me. And, you know, you're sitting at home all day and you don't actually really move a lot. You know, you get to the age where you can't run and keep up with the hunt, because that running's a bit of a waste of time anyhow. And certainly you do not want to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. So that, and you want to stay in the cave watching the flat screen television, even though you've got no power source back then. Okay, so you had this, you know, black screen back then. You couldn't see anything. That's why they did hand painting around it, because they were trying to imagine that there was something on the screen.
Makes all sense, yeah.
Yes, it's very logical. So basically, if you were in the cave, what would your profile would need? It would need that you don't know when the food's coming back, so you need to be storing it, right? You also need a little bit of a layer on you, because it might be a bit chilly sitting around, and you only got to take the rubbish out for the rubbish man. That was it. So ultimately, you know, you can imagine your metabolism going, okay, we're now sitting around. We need to be in cave profile, just start growing hair anywhere on your body you didn't really want it, and basically become a little bit porkier. And that is a survival mechanism, by the way. And the other one, going out, and actually, if you went out as a porky and ran down the road after a saber-toothed tiger, the saber-toothed tiger would start laughing. Okay, that's a burger. I'm going to eat it. You're not eating me. I'm eating you. And yeah, that's what you said. So you can see, from a survival point of view, being porky is not a good idea, especially when there's things that want to eat you. So if you bring that into where we live these days, you know, we can see that none of us are out on the hunt all day, are we? We're not, none of us doing it. We might go out and do a little run in the morning if we're, you know, really want to do that. But you think, okay, how could I replicate, and how minimum amount of exercise could I do that would replicate this hunter profile? And you go, okay, well, you know, you could do, is it that you have to run all day, or is it that you just spread intensive pieces of bursts of exercise across the day? And that would probably be more like it. So then it's just a question of how minimum effort, maximum reward you have to do. So then I thought, okay, if I just do it every time I go to the loo, you know, average person goes to the loo between 5 to 10 times a day. So that's 5 workouts of maximum 20 seconds. Well, let's make it 10. So really averaging a minute a day exercise. Now that's super cool. I can work with that. That's kind of easy. And what it does is it does change the profile. So the metabolism, even when I was 50, started going, hang on a minute, we've gone from cave now, because we've been sitting around doing nothing for years, to now move into this hunter, and it started to burn off the calories very quickly. And what you find is the body changes in a 30-day period. And they did this with NASA. They put glasses on people that reversed their eyes upside down, so they'd see the world upside down. And it took about 25 to 30 days for the eyes to now be reprogrammed, or the brain to be reprogrammed. So when they took the glasses off, the person saw upside down. But if they took the glasses off at 15 days, it reversed it immediately. So, and you had to start the 30 days again. So you can see that you need this programming to go for that period. And that's what a lot of people do when they go to the gym after, you know, Christmas. Oh, I'm going to work out. And it lasts about 2 weeks, doesn't get to 30 days, and there's no real effect. But also, they're also conditioning the body to accept a certain amount of exercise, which means that the body, when now with your body, you've told it, I need to go for a run each day to feel like I've achieved something. So you've conditioned the body and conditioned the brain to need that to feel good about what your next minute's going to be. I've just conditioned my brain and body to do the exact opposite. So, you know, I'll be lying in bed and I might do a single flex of my arm, which will beat your, you know, 20 minutes running down the road from the police hands down. At this point, I compared to the average 58-year-old who doesn't work out and doesn't do any exercise, as I said, the doctors yesterday said you've got the heart and the blood, you know, the pulse of an athlete, and I'm going, they said you must do a lot of exercise. I'm not really interested in that.
Okay, that's all good. But so I'm curious, because before you mentioned that you feel like a failure, right? Like your life is a failure. So
better than the success, because you can work from the bottom up. If you're going to put success up here, you're always trying to get to it, which means you've never achieved it, which means you're a pretty unhappy person, because you only, once you get there, can you ever be happy. Now, if you say I'm a failure and I'm pretty happy about that, and then you take success away. And then success, funnily enough, comes to you because it's pretty easy, because you're not worried about it anymore, not stressing.
Okay, so you mean that you kind of let go and then it automatically happens?
Yeah, it's the let's put it like this. When you let's put a word in your brain, for example, for a second. Let's say failure. All right. Now let me ask the question. There's always a visual image that's buried in your unconscious that's assigned to a word. Okay, yeah. So when you just try to just let the image come up from your mind, and don't say Kern when you get this image in your head. Okay, well, if I say the word failure, what image comes up?
Well, in my case, it's not being able to have a profitable business.
No. Slow down. Go back. What image comes to the mind? It will be an image, the word. It could be almost anything. You have to let it come up because it's in your unconscious somewhere. Yeah. So there is an image.
I know what kind of image it is. It's for me being back in the corporate world at a desk.
Okay, so when you look at this image, okay, let's go what's called the submodalities of the image, all right? So let's look at it. When you're thinking of this image in your head, is it a video or is it a still image?
I think it's a video. I think it's a clip.
Okay, and what's it? Are you in it or are you watching something?
I think I'm watching myself.
Okay, that's good. And are you looking at the back of you or the front of you or the side of you?
Side.
Okay, and you're sitting at a desk that you know or have been by, or is it an imaginary desk?
Yes, it's from my past.
So, and really, when you look at yourself in this picture, what's on your face in the picture?
I mean, unhappiness or hopelessness.
No, just forget that. Just look at the face. Stop putting image and projecting that into it yet. But just go, are you smiling? Are you happy? Or are you just show me the face in the picture.
It's very neutral.
Give me the neutral. Now, it hasn't changed at all. If I give you a sequence of unhappy, happy, and not happy, and you just sit there and go... Okay, so expression. So it's neutral, okay? But it's not looking desperately unhappy, but it's not certainly looking happy, yeah?
True, yeah.
Okay, so now we're looking at, is it color or black and white? As
color.
Okay, is it bright or is it just sort of a little bit fuzzy?
How I see normal colors with my eyes.
Okay, but is the picture fuzzy?
No, it's quite clear.
So you've got a clear definition in your head, a visual image of not really being that happy. Now, the image, when you look at this image, what is the emotion that you feel?
Fear.
Fear. Okay, that's a good word. Fear. Okay. Now, if you were to actually take the word fear, right, and now do the same exercise, what image would come to your head?
I don't know.
Just let it come up. Fear.
When I think of fear, what kind of image I have?
Yeah, just allow the image to come up. It's in your unconscious. It's not in your, you've not thought about it before. Just allow some image. It will be some image that comes up with fear. It could be anything. It can be sort of like a rabbit if you want.
I think it's more going around in the dark.
So it's a darkness. Can you explain that? Look, it's going to be an image that comes. So try to let it form in your mind.
Yeah, so my first image was going around in the dark on the street.
Okay, that's cool. Okay, so this is, it's kind of freaky. It's a bit weird. We're going into your unconscious mind here. And as you know, we do the science of the unconscious mind. And really what we're doing is exploring, because every word in your vocabulary has an image assigned just below the unconscious, which has an emotion assigned to it. And when, for example, if I use the word, work or something like that, then that's going to have an image assigned. And this is going to be, but there's going to be also not just a word with an image, but there's going to be another word behind that with another image, and another word behind that with another image, and going down the layers. So really going down the layers of your unconscious mind. Top one is just a representation. And now you're not even thinking of these things till I ask you, but this is your unconscious mind and your, the unknown universe for you. And this exists in the way it exists, even though you don't know it. But all of these things represent how you navigate life and what feelings you get for certain images. So in fear, let's just explore that for a second. You know, is this going around in a dark street? Is that something that you're remembering, or is that something you're imagining?
I think I remember it.
Can you give me any more detail?
I think it's just there were times when I was going out in the dark and then I was going home and I felt a bit scared.
Okay, so let's work with the fear, with that feeling. When you felt scared, okay, where did you feel that feeling in your body? You know, if you find it difficult, but just was it in your stomach, your shoulders, your neck?
I think usually it's for me in the stomach.
In the stomach. And when you feel this feeling, what kind of color would you give it?
Red.
Okay. It's remember, everything is instinctual in the unconscious. It's not a logical thing. There's no right or wrong in this at all. Our left brain is always going, is the answer right? Red. You go, there's no fucking red answer. Don't forget that. It's your brain, not mine. Okay, she's got the red right. Fine. Let's give her a tick. A gold star. That's what we're programmed to do, you see. Pointless. It's your brain. Okay, so you've got red. Is it a dark red or is it a light red?
I think it's a light red.
Okay, so if you imagine yourself in this image of fear, dark street, it's a light red. Now, if you imagine the red, which way is it going in your body? Is it going upwards or is it going downwards, backwards, forwards, expanding? Where would you feel that red is going?
Upwards.
Upwards. Okay. Notice it's quite specific. Yeah. Each question I'm giving you has a specific thing assigned to it. And this is how the brain actually navigates reality through symbols, like with words. You know, if I say to you, give me a word for, you know, a four-legged creature, what was the first thing come to mind?
A what kind of creature?
Four-legged. It's the opposite to a biped. It's a quad.
Dog, I guess.
Okay, so a dog. Okay, so we already, you know, when we see a four-legged creature, we identify it first off as a baby. We go, dog. And your mama goes, no, that's a cat. And you go, dog. And you go, mum goes, no, you ain't going to be growing up to be any Einstein, are you really? It goes, dog. Yeah, we've heard that one before. And then get stuck in your head, look at the cupboard, dog. And you go, no, we really are getting confused here, aren't we? That's a dog. And if you say that cupboard's a dog again, you're going to get good slapping. And really, we start to navigate reality through symbols that are assigned to words. And we get this structure starting to go on. And then if we meet a dog, we go, dog. And then the dog bites our finger. We now get a negative image with that dog association. So now we've got the word, we've got the image, we've got the emotional association and possibly a bad event. Then it's a question is, can we remember the bad event? Because in our minds blank out bad events so we can get on with life. Otherwise, we would relive them on a circuit like that and really get very unhappy. So that's really what breaks down a little bit when people get depressed. They go on this bit where the same, you know, thoughts go around the vortex and take them down. Okay. So with a, you know, a dog situation, what you need to do is start to think of, okay, why is it, for example, if you were afraid of dogs, why is it? And you might not be able to remember it because of this blanking situation. But once you start to explore the feeling and start to explore the word behind, the emotion behind, localize it, what color it is, like fear for you is a light red and it's going up. And then it's a question of when it goes up, where does it go up? How far does it go? Does it just try to imagine how far that red, think of walking around in the street and how far up it goes.
My head, I guess.
And where does it go after your head?
Nowhere it stays there.
Well, that means your head would blow up. And you'd get a very bad headache. With all feelings like this, they go up and then they go somewhere. Everything in the universe is moving. It doesn't, because it's got, remember, it's got inertia to it. Inertia means it's already expanded, it's gone up. So it would come out of your head maybe, and then it would come back into your body. But you might need to imagine that. We could give you the choice. If you were to imagine it, would it be going out of your head down and back through your back or coming through the front? Which would feel more right?
And going down on the back?
Going down, so it's all intuitive in this kind of world. The unknown universe is intuitive. It's not, like I said, right or wrong. Let's just get it right. Okay, so it's going down your back. So then what you would do is if you felt fear, you would start to go, okay, I've got a red feeling of fear coming up for whatever reason. Fear of failure, yeah? And then we've got an image assigned to failure, okay? So what we would do is we'd say, okay, let's work with that. Let's rather than the energy going up and then down to our back, let's change the color, okay? And let's create something that's real. What do you really like in life? What's your most pleasurable thing?
I guess spending time with my boyfriend.
Okay, that's always good. Okay, so you've not been seeing him very long then?
Half a year now.
Yeah, 6 months. So it's going to go downhill from there. That's not a problem. But and if we have you had an argument yet?
Well, once.
Just once. Well, don't worry. They come every day soon. It's not a problem. Uh-huh.
You know, I've been in a 4-year relationship beforehand, right?
Yes, you have explained this, but you know, we'll still go around the same circle. It doesn't matter. So basically, when you're in this nice feeling, when you see your boyfriend and you see his face smiling at you, does he smile?
Yeah, he does.
When he sees you?
Sometimes, I think.
Only sometimes, you think. Okay, you're not sure. But hopefully when he does, that gives you a good feeling, yeah?
Yeah, it
does. Where would you have that good feeling when imagining him smiling at you?
Both in the stomach.
Okay, and what color would that be?
Blue.
That's a blue feeling. Okay, so let's take that blue feeling, yeah? And let's just imagine back into the fear situation, and let's just take that red and then just imagine it's now blue. All right, so what you do is we take you, okay, it's a technique that we do a number of times, but we take you back into that feeling of fear, explore it a little bit, so you started to get the feeling and started to localize in your mind about the light color red in your stomach, it moving up and then down into your back. So what we then do is go, okay, let's just try to imagine that blue now, and let's reverse the cycle and start spinning it and increase the blue every time you found the fear. What that will do is neutralize fear in the link in your neuro, in your synapses, because if you can imagine your fear thought is like a little cable, and it's got word, image, emotion, linked to color, linked to movement, whole body experience, not a good one, I want to go puke up, okay? That's the link. So you get a physiological response from this thought. And you can feel quite sick. Like I said, if someone's been bitten by a cat or something, we use the word cat in a sentence, and they start to feel, they don't just feel uncomfortable because you've heard the word cat. They don't know it. It's on an unconscious level. They just start to feel a little bit sick. And they go, to be honest, I just feel sick right now. I don't know why. And off they go. Okay. So the more we explore the feelings, the associations, the way our mind has stacked this decoding system, then the more we can start to take control of it by saying, okay, I'm going to create a new neural pathway when I think of fear. Instead of thinking red, I'm going to think blue, and I'm going to think of it going up into my head, and I'm going to replace the image in my head of this street with no lights on to a street with no lights on, but lots of happy people sitting there and just sort of laughing, having a drink and welcoming you into a pub or something like that. And you're going, oh, that's a good feeling. And then just increase that blue feeling in your mind. So every time you now look at that, the fear's gone. So really when we're looking at the drivers towards failure, for example, they're all unconscious drivers that we've not explored. And as such, they're tending to control our feelings and make us get up out of bed early and go running in the morning. Otherwise, we feel guilty we haven't done enough in the day, which is a pointless exercise after all, because there's no rule about doing stuff. And, you know, you read these success books about successful people, how they say, I get up early in the morning. And yeah, that's because my butler has just come in and knocked on the door and said, do you want to sleep for another 6 hours, sir? You go, yes, thank you very much. I'm going to sleep now. They don't tell you that bit. I always get up early in the morning because it's good for success. Absolute rubbish. You'll find that when you model a successful person, you're always modeling the successful person after they've become a success. That is the wrong person to model. It was a different person before they were successful. And half the time, they probably were a manic depressive laying in bed all day. And at one point, a opportunity turned up and they went, oh, I got out of bed before 10 that day. That was early. and I saw this opportunity and I grabbed it, and now I'm a multimillionaire. But I'll teach everybody that getting up early is the way it came about. And for other people, getting up early isn't just before 10, it's before 5.
I'm not sure if I agree, because it's about taking the time to experiment and find a recipe that works.
Yes, there is a truth to that, actually. I will say, like when you try to cook a cake, okay, you can't, you know, if your success was a cake, you would have to go, okay, I can't, you can go down the supermarket and you can buy a cake, and that's kind of successful to start with, and it's an easy route. But if you want to cook a cake, you have to find the ingredients, you have to play with the ingredients, you have to practice with the ingredients. But you know, the problem is with a lot of people, they're doing that because they're not looking forward to the cake. They're more running away from just not having a cake, that makes them feel incapacitated if they don't have the cake that other people have. And that's the wrong reason to be cooking this cake. The right reason to be cooking the cake is because the cooking of the cake is the fun bit. And if you get up at 5 in the morning, 10 in the morning, 1:30, it doesn't matter. Because when you get up out of bed, you're going, I'm looking forward to cooking my cake. And I've had a nice rest and I'm going to do that. And so instead of having these dictatorial rhythms that really, by the way, are not correct in us to be super creative. If you run your mind around a system, then that is left brain. And that means that you've started to control and program your mind to work within the left brain. And thus, all of the creativity goes out the window, or the majority of it. I would say probably about 3,000% of it, but you know, it's up to the individual. So if you start to run your day to a routine, then you become process subservient. That's about 98% of the population. Those people are always just doing things because they think that is the path to making something work. Okay, but they're not really potentially experimenting, they're just doing something. Experimentation comes from intuition and insight. That comes from the right brain. So if we localize ourselves constantly doing process, which is what most process people teach people about success, get up in the morning, do this, write your thoughts out, go and do this, have that, work out in the gym, do this, have your calendar, organize your day, all of this kind of stuff, you're going, Jesus, that's almost like a prison. I've created a prison of things to do to make my life better. Now, and I want this success, otherwise this fear thing that I've got is going to come get me. And often I tend to use the analogy that this whole scenario is a bit like being in a big, like a big pit. It's a long way down, like a well right down it. And you're in this, and all the walls are made of cookies. Yeah, lots of cookies. Not bad, actually. And you're climbing up the cookies, but there's a little tiger cub at the bottom. And the more you climb up the cookies, the more cookies you break and feed the tiger. So the tiger just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you start finding that you're really now actually running away from a tiger rather than actually enjoying the cookies on the way. Do you understand the difference? And yeah, for when you want to live life, and remember life, for me, my definition of success is taking another breath. And people go, what are you talking about? I said, well, are you ill? I said, we're all dying. So yes, but I just don't know when that's going to be. So once you get a little bit older, you realize that people that you've known have just one day turned up at work and they've dropped dead. And there's lots of them. It was, and by the way, it wasn't of COVID, although they would have been put down to COVID. Funny enough. He coughed. You know, funny enough, they always say he croaked his last. That's called a COVID croak now. Really, pointless exercise. But that's the foolish world we live in. So I'm not going to go into that one. But really, when you look at it, you start to realize that we're creating a prison for ourselves of routine. And in the way you've put it, I believe that this has to happen for this, that to happen for me. Okay. I believe the exact opposite for me, for you. You know, that means that I'll be heading off down the beach in a minute to sun myself and paddle in the water and go for a little swim. But then I might not. Okay. Because I haven't booked it in my diary to do it. I may or I may not. You know, it's choice is what we have in this world. And if we exercise choice, that means every minute of the day, we have the ability to create the future the way that we want, not fearing failure in social terms. As I said, success is taking another breath. And if you live like that, then every moment is a gift. And once you've got a gift, you feel quite successful. A lot of people, when you woke up this morning, didn't manage to succeed with that one. What I mean, they didn't manage it. And we don't want to think about that. But, you know, there's a lot of them didn't. They just croaked in their night. And you didn't. So when you open your eye in the morning, you go, oh, I'm still here. That should be good. I think I might go back to sleep for a while just to do that one again, because I can just check and have that pleasure again of sleeping in. And I wake up again and I go, oh, I'm still here. That's success. What more do you want? There is nothing else. And then you go, oh, I've got to pay my bills. And you go, okay. Well, when you wake up in that little twilight zone of waking up, that's when your brain, as it's thinking right now, it's kind of a little still tired. It's not really switched on. Some people just wake up like that and they don't have this intermittent zone. But the intermittent zone is where that there's the fusing of the unconscious and the fusing of the conscious. So for me, when I wake up, I go, okay, what are we doing today? Unconscious mind goes, oh, we're going to be doing this, 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 this. I go, can I have some more sleep, please? And it goes, okay. So I go back to sleep and my unconscious mind's talking to me all the time. Well, we've got that to do and that to do and that to do. It's like, I went to bed with no jobs. You know, now you've given me all these jobs to do. And it goes, all right, then just have another sleep then. We have a nice life. So these jobs, and can we do them tomorrow? And it goes, well, if you want to, because we could go to the beach now. And I go, okay, that sounds much better life. We'll go to the beach because it's much more fun down there than actually sitting in here typing on a computer and sending emails to me, people who don't want to talk to me anyhow.
But I think you can take that approach of going to the beach if you have cash flow set up for the next months, ideally, if that's not the case.
How about going to the beach first and then lying on the beach and becoming creative and deciding how you're going to sort your cash flow set out up and how this cash flow thing. Oh, yes. There's an organization that does cash flow like a game. Oh, what a bunch of fucking idiots. Seriously, I don't know any entrepreneur that ever had any cash flow or even a business plan in their life ever. And they were very multiple, you know, they're very, very rich. But most of them couldn't read or write. It was a bit pointless. You know, most people who've got an education, they sit on the computer, I've got to create a business plan. I've got to have my forecast for 3 years. They don't even, you know, they're out of business in 2 months and wasted 3 days doing something that was a pointless thing for 3 years. I mean, can you actually see the irony behind this? I'm just suggesting that if you go into your creative mind and you start practicing with it in the way it's meant to be designed, then you will get intuition and insight coming to you all the time. I'm going to give you a key example of this one.
Go ahead.
From yesterday, which is kind of cool. I went to the doctor's, I said, in Zurich yesterday, and then I was wandering through the station. I wasn't meant to be in the station. I was just in a, you know, wandering about mode, really. And I was just looking at my feet, which are at the end of my legs. So I'm wondering if it's a massive place, Zurich HB. And I looked up and there was a guy called Josh. I haven't seen Josh for probably 2 years when he invited me to open up a conference here in Zurich called Elevate, which was for psychedelics. Now, I've never done a psychedelic in my life, but they wanted me to open it up. I found that quite ironical, really, but never mind. So I say, hi, Josh. And he says, hi, Kern. And he says, I was just thinking about you the other day. And I said to him, Josh, I was thinking about you too. Isn't it weird? We're just standing here in front of each other. And he said, yeah, it is. So I just started talking to him. And then Stefan, you know, from the Council for Human Development, he just turns up in the middle of the station. Now, okay, hi, Stefan. Hi, Ken. And he doesn't know Josh. They introduce each other. And I say to Josh, he says, we're looking for someone to do the blockchain. And I said, where are you working? He's like, Julius Baer's. And it's a bank. And he says, I'm in IT. I did this blockchain thing. It didn't really work out. I said, I forgot you did blockchain. We need someone to do blockchain. Oh, we'll have a chat about that. He says, yes, it'd be really interesting if we could. I said, that's very good then. But the weird thing was, funny enough, after leaving the two of them, I've remembered that when I first met Stefan, it was in a place called Yermally, up in the cafe I used to work at. It was like a big sort of restaurant place. Not work, but I used to see people in the lounge area. And it was weird because I saw Josh 3 years ago when I first met him. And 5 minutes later, Stefan sat in the same seat the first time I met Stefan. So they'd never met each other, but they'd been 5 minutes apart in sitting in the same seat 3 years ago. And now they, funny enough, were in the same place at the same time with me in HP Station talking about a project that comes together. And what you find is you can go, oh, that's just coincidence, Curtin. But it's just, I love coincidence. Because once you start to see coincidence, you know you're on the right path. You know that the destiny is being laid out for you. But most of us don't want to even think of destiny. We want to think of getting up in the morning and going for a run. That's not destiny. That's just destruction of your knees. It's a different thing. You know, once you see people who have been running for years, you see them that walking around and hobbling. That's why I don't walk around and hobble, because I've never run in my life. Waste of time. But then again, it's all impact on the knees. You start to learn these things. And really, you know, human beings weren't designed to run. They were designed to get into a car. Much easier for you. Or get on, well, not public transport.
So how can someone really tap into destiny?
Well, you start to actually sit down for a day and maybe take a day off out of your life that's like a hamster wheel going round and round. And you just go, okay, what do I like in life? What is it I really, really, really like? And you ask the why behind the why behind the why. And you ask, what is it like? And what do I not like? And you go, okay, I don't like that. I don't like that. And I don't like that. And then someone will go, oh, but your butt come in, but you have to do these things. And you go, no, you don't. It's just you telling yourself that you do. Yes, but society needs them. You know, if I don't do this, someone can give me a fine. So what? And people go, oh, yes, but you've got to pay your fines. Do you? Very interesting. Not heard that one before, but other people live by rules. I don't, and I don't choose to. So if you want destiny, stop living by rules that other people have given you and told you that you need to support their life projection. That's their rules. Go out, make your own rules. Go out and say, okay, what do I really want to do with my life? All right. And then you'll get some dumb first answers that will all be superficial. And you go, oh, fuck. You know? And then you go, okay, let's just go behind. And then we go, okay, now we're getting someone. I was working with someone the other day. She was 41, pretty unhappy, working in, or trying to become C-suite executive. And I said, why do you want to be a C-suite executive? She said, because I do. I want to get there. Okay, that sounds like a good answer. Are you happy? Not really. Okay, well, do you think you'd be happier as a C-suite executive? Well, I don't know. I'm not there. Okay, so you're going somewhere you don't know that you're going to make you happy. Does that make sense? Has what you've been doing so far actually made you happy? No. Do you want to keep doing it? Well, it's what I wanted. I said, what for? I don't know. Okay, great. So we don't know a lot of why we're doing anything or where we're going at the moment. So it's kind of getting difficult for me to cope with, to even understand destiny involved in this. I said, so let's just back off for a second and let's just forget your backstory, forget your career, forget your CV, forget all that crap, and just say, what would it be that you'd like to do? And she said, oh, I can think like that, but. I said, there's a but comes in straight away. You go, can we forget the but? Can we just shut up for a second and just go, white piece of paper, what would we like to do in life? I never thought before. Okay, well, maybe it's a good time because we're pretty fucking unhappy at the moment. So, and that's why you're talking to me. So, well, are you a person that likes to do things for yourself or other people? She said, well, I'm kind of in the middle. I like doing things for other people, but also for myself at the same time. That's a good answer, I said, because if you like doing things for other people, you're going to be a bit of a slave. If you like doing things for yourself, you're going to be a bit selfish. If you balance the two a little bit, then you, we've got a basis for understanding what you should be doing in life. Okay. She said, oh, okay. I said, probably don't want to run a business because 9 out of 10 of them go bust. So it's a bit of a waste of time, really. If you went into a casino and you had a 9 out of 10 chance of failing, you wouldn't probably play. She said, no. I said, so forget the business idea. That's a waste of time. Okay. So you don't really want to work for somebody else because you've been oppressed all the time and you hate your boss at the moment. So, yeah, I don't like him at all. Okay. Well, that's not good. That's not conducive to your growth, is it? No. Okay. So what we can say is we've already knocked out what we don't want. We don't want a boss. We don't want a business. We actually want to do something that actually helps other people and helps ourselves. And when we say help ourselves, do you want to grow or do you want to shrink? I want to grow. Okay. So you want nice challenges and new things. That do you want support? That sounds good. Yeah. Okay. Do you want support from someone who can help you, guide you, someone that you can help, somebody and other people around you, can be a community that actually helps you in the right way. And they want your success as much as you want yours and theirs. And she goes, oh, that sounds like a nice thing to do. So what would you be doing if you had all that around you? She said, well, I come from Beirut, so I will be trying to organize stuff to give people the help that they need to get out of the situations that they're in. Okay, so you like the global scale rather than the one-to-one. Yeah, I do. I like the idea of being able to use my skills to be able to arrange that and do something of value to society and make it better. Okay, so really what we've already got is a career path developed. It's just a question of how we put that and implement that. But the problem is going to be this. She said, what? I said, you're going to say but to me again. And you're going to say all the reasons in your backstory that are going to stop you doing that. And she said, no, I won't. She said, but, you know, my parents, straight back in. I go, did we just not do what I just said we're going to do? She said, yeah, I think we did. I said, so, you know, there's a few things going wrong in the brain here. We just have to twiddle a few knobs, flick a few switches, and then we'll accelerate away and have a happy life. And she went, ah, happy life. I'm not sure about that. I said, well, you need to go away and think about what it is. If you want to continue doing what you've been doing and it ain't working out, it's like definition of success, of failure, you know, of stupidity, actually, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And you've been doing it for 41 years and it's not worked out. So at some time, there's a knock on the head and says, maybe there's something else in your life that could be more beneficial. Maybe it's a destiny, meaning, purpose. And, you know, there we go. Now, that's it.
If you want to find out more, make sure to check out councilforhumandevelopment.org and please share the podcast with your friends on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter with the hashtag Council for Human Development.